Welcome to the interview, everybody. This is Mark McNeese, and I'm very happy to be talking today to someone who is also on the board for the Mystery Writers of America, New York chapter. His name is David Bushman. He's the author of four traditionally published books, including most recently Murder at Teal's Pond, Hazel Drew and the Mystery that Inspired Twin Peaks. He's also the co-founder and co-publisher at Fayetteville Mafia Press, an indie publisher that launched in 2018. David spent over two decades as a television curator at the Paley Center for Media, which used to be the Museum of Television and Radio, organizing screening series, panel discussions, and exhibitions, and writing about media and its impact on every aspect of society. David, how are you?
I'm good, Mark. It's nice to be here, and thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And if I missed anything there, please fill us in.
Well, I would just say five books. Three on pop culture, one on Buffy the Vampire Slayer, one on Twin Peaks, one on Mark Frost, who created Twin Peaks, and then the two true crime books. Other than that, everything was right on the money.
I did see those books, by the way, when I was pulling up your bibliography. And you specialize in true crime, and I wanted to make that the focus of the conversation because I like true crime. We were talking in the what I call the green room before we started recording. I love historical fiction, and they're not the same. So can you just go into true crime a little bit and define that for people?
Yeah, I mean, it's my entryway into true crime was through pop culture. I mentioned my connections to Twin Peaks. When I was working at Variety, back in the 90s is when Twin Peaks came to TV, and we were running stories about it every week about how this great film director David Lynch was coming to TV, and ABC kept putting off the premiere because they were nervous about how people would react. So I remembered that Mark Frost had who co-created it with Lynch had mentioned that his inspiration for the triggering murder of a 19-year-old girl in the series was a true story that had happened upstate in New York back in 1908. So it was just everything about that was coincidental. That there, if it wasn't for the pop culture angle, I wouldn't have gotten into it. And if it wasn't, it just so happened that it was a historical true crime. And there are advantages to that and disadvantages to that. But I also have a background in journalism. I was a reporter for Gannett newspapers up in Westchester for several years. And actually, one of the stories I covered was the disappearance at the time. It's since been, I think, ruled a murder of Robert Durst's first wife, Kathy Durst, who he allegedly had taken to the train station up in Bedford or Lewisboro. And she went back after the weekend to her residency at Albert Einstein in the city, but she never got there. And it turned out that, everyone always suspected that he had murdered her anyway. But so I had some experience covering crime and pop culture. So in some ways, it seems like a perfect marriage. But, it's not like I had, like I said, I'm going to go write a true crime book. It's like, it just kind of was circumstantial. And it was also just circumstantial that it was history. And it involved a tremendous amount of research. But, you know, unlike writing a mystery novel, the story's there for you to uncover through research. There's a tremendous amount of research involved. And you're not making anything up. I mean, there's a certain amount of freedom that you have. I remember, stop me if I'm talking too much, but I remember that we had to figure out how to open the book. And mm-hmm. I've been to enough writing conferences to know that agents will tell you that if they're not gripped within the first few pages, that they're not gonna keep reading because they're always complaining about how overworked they are and whatever. So we had to figure out how to open this book, and we obviously had no idea what was going on through Hazel, who's the victim, her mind. But we had this discussion with our publisher, who was Thomas and Mercer, and they encouraged us to do what they call creative fiction, creative nonfiction, I'm sorry, yeah. creative nonfiction, where you take some liberties. So based on everything that we did know about her, we went inside her mind in the opening. We had her at the scene of the murder, thinking things that she, we have no idea if she was actually thinking them at the time that she was up there, but, you know, we know that at some time in her life, she was thinking these things. So we took, with our publisher's encouragement, and they said, you know, they were going to market this as creative nonfiction, which means we had that license to do that. So there was a little bit of invention going on there, but the big thing is that the whole story is there. You just have to find it. Whereas in a mystery novel like you write, you're making everything up. And I think that's I'd love to try it one day, but it's very intimidating.
I was going to ask you about that because of how you would structure something that is like that. And you mentioned creative nonfiction. I immediately thought of In Cold Blood.
Right.
Capote's masterpiece. But because you have to take creative license, you have to still create suspense, and you need a beginning and a middle and an end. And it fascinates me how you go about that with something that is nonfiction. And also now the Menendez brothers, which is a TV series, not a book, but there's license being taken. You have to, in order to actually pull off structuring something like that.
Well, if you're talking, there were two things with the Menendez brothers. One was the documentary and one was the docudrama that Ryan Murphy mm-hmm. did. If you're talking about that, if we talk about the docudrama, that is, and I guess in a sense it is the equivalent of creative nonfiction, but there's so much that the writers there are making up, and we didn't feel we had that much liberty. We tried to stick more to the facts, but like you said, we still had to structure it. We still had to create atmosphere. Another big part of it, you know, there are some things in common with writing novels. You need dynamic characters. You need to be able to immerse, you know, draw the reader into the story. I don't know how you think you do it, but yeah, I mean, there's story, there's suspense, there's also, I think, characters is a big, big part of it. And you know, mysteries are really about people anyway, right? Like why are they driven to do the things that they do, I think is really the most interesting thing about a mystery. So we had to really delve into the characters a lot, and we didn't do a lot of, we did a ton of research, and that stuff was pretty much, and we got lucky because it was incredible. There were incredible stories. I mean, the politics of it, of the murder investigation, and the fact that one guy was, one cop who was heavily involved in the investigation was a member of a Catholic, like anti-Protestant, or no, I'm sorry, a Protestant anti-Catholic group called the APA, which was a big deal back in the day around the turn of the 20th century. And he was involved in a melee on election day in the late 1800s that resulted in the death of somebody. And then somebody else got the death penalty for that murder, who probably was not guilty. So there were all these incredible stories that just happened to be part of it. But again, Mark, we didn't have to make any of that up. And that's, you know, that's, again, to me, that's the challenging thing about, you as you're researching true crime, and it's so much of it is about research, you know, you get excited by the things that you're finding, but they are there for you if you find them. And to me, you know, you never have to say to yourself, you know, I've edited a lot of fiction. You never have to say to yourself, you know, is this believable? Is my character acting in a believable way? Is this something my character do? Because because they did it, you know? So in some ways, it's a lot less challenging to me, I think. That's why I have so much respect for people who, you know, write novels based full completely on their imagination.
How do you, I noticed you also, you've got Buffy the Vampire Slayer, All That's Left to Know About Sunnydale's Slayer of Vampires. How do you pick your subjects?
Well, Buffy was something that I was a TV curator at the Paley Center for Media. So that was show, I think that, you know, it's a little bit of a problematic show now because Joss Whedon has become kind of toxic. But I think that was, you know, just a brilliant, brilliant show. And my daughter was too young, my older daughter was too young to watch it at the time, but we went back and watched it afterwards. So it was something that my was very deeply important to my family. I mean, older daughter went trick-or-treating one Halloween as Buffy, and it's just a great, great, great show. And so that was a labor of love. And then we just needed to know if you just had to find a publisher, and we had already at that point established a relationship with Hal Leonard Books or Applause Theater and Center. They're now owned by Roman and Littlefield, but they were owned by Hal Leonard at the time. And we had already established a relationship with them because of the Twin Peaks book that we did. And we had proposed Twin Peaks again, coincidentally, right before it was coming. We found out it was coming back. And once that news broke, the publisher came to us and said, yeah, we definitely want this book. But I mean, I studied TV for 25 years, and I proposed a lot of different ideas, and Twin Peaks was the one they went for. And then after that, I mean, writing, you know, getting to write a book about Buffy and talking to those people, I mean, that's a complete labor of love. And so if it's going to be up to me, I'm going to choose something that I want to, you know, that I'm passionate about and want to write about. So I got lucky both times.
Now, I know you do panels. We both do as part of our board membership, and because we like doing them. Do you find that is there a difference between an audience that might come to hear about true crime versus, you know, the mystery fiction, or I don't know. I'm curious about that, or if it's just a mix of audience members and they might be interested, because you're a little bit of a standalone in that regard.
It is very, at every event, like I've been to BoucherCon, I've been to Bloody Scotland, I've been to Killer Nashville. At every event I'm at, true crime is so much in the minority. So yeah, it's a complete outlier. But what I, you know, of the people who do come up to me afterwards and talk to me, it seems like almost all of them have stories that they not necessarily live through. Sometimes it is stuff that they live through, or maybe they've discovered something about their family history, or they lived in a town where something happened. And they're usually people who are thinking of writing a true crime book on their own. And I guess that's probably true at mystery for fiction writers also, except the difference being that these are people who actually either live through something or they've discovered something about their family. So it's maybe more personal in that way. But they usually have stories that they want to tell, and they're just not really sure how to do it.
Well, that makes me think. I'm ghostwriting an autobiography with a client, and I really like her. It's a fascinating life, but I'm finding it to be really challenging to take a real life and shape that into a narrative, a book.
You know, it's so interesting because, you know, you're somebody whose entire experience has been one way, trying to go the other way, and you're finding it challenging. And I think that if I were to do the reverse of what you're doing, I would say the same thing to you. I think it would be so challenging to, do you think her story, let me ask you a question. Do you think, I don't want to put you on the spot, but do you think that her story is worthy of a book?
Oh, yes. It's okay. Really fascinating. And it involves a lot of ancestry. I mean, it's not like, you know, because of course people will come up and go, I have this story to tell. I should write a book about my life. Okay. Everybody says that.
Right.
But she actually has a really interesting life, and her father and her ancestors coming over from Poland. It's really interesting. I can't really say more than that, but, no, it's definitely worth telling the story.
So do you find the problem that the challenge is in the structure, or?
Yes, it's in the structure because there are so many details and so many people involved. And as a fiction writer who understands the need for suspense, creating, you know, ending a chapter so that you want to read the next one.
Right.
You know, it has to be structured in a way so that it's not just this happened and then that happened and then this happened and then that happened. Right. It has to actually have a narrative to it, a cohesive narrative that propels the story forward. She has all those elements. I mean, this is really on me. Because I started out thinking, well, I'll give her a chapter a week, and now it's like maybe a month, a chapter a month. But we love meeting. We get together every week. We talk. We end up talking more about our lives than we do about the book, because we just really hit it off with each other. Our chemistry is really good, but it's also a job, and it's I'm really happy to have this job.
Well, but do you know either the ending or the beginning of this book?
Yes, the beginning was written. I already did the beginning, but then it goes back. It goes back in time and then comes forward, and I sort of know where it's going to end. But we've agreed that this could take a year, easily could take a year, and I'm fine with that. I'm just saying that my challenge with it, because it's not, well, my challenge, even if it was fiction, would be the same. It's turning it into a book that you want to read.
Right. I think that your point about ending each chapter on a cliffhanger note or something, it's kind of like, to me, I totally agree with you, and that's true also for true crime writing, and I think of it as like a TV episode where you can't wait to watch then, you know, in the old days, maybe in our old days, the next week to see the episode, but now it's like you just let your TV keep running and you get to the next episode. But I totally agree with you about how important that is. I also wanted to mention to you, you mentioned a lot of characters, and I don't know if this is helpful to you or not, but our publisher, again, Thomas and Mercer, did, because of the Hazel Drew story, the Twin Peaks murder, did have so many characters in it. She did ask us to have a dramaturg. Yeah, yeah, at the beginning, and we did, and that, I think, helped them, so that might be something that you might think about doing.
Okay. Now, is there a true crime writing community? Are you by yourself? Do you feel lonely, or do you have other true crime writers in your life?
Well, I mean, I there's crime writers of communities that I belong to, and not so much, Reddit is a huge on true crime. And then also, for some strange reason, I mean, with not my second book, but now my third book, which I'm working on now, which is an anthology of unsolved true crime cold cases in New York State between 1900 and 1940. That's for Globe Pico or whatever. And then book after that, which I've also started, is also a cold case. So for some reason, I'm keep writing about cold cases, which again has advantage and disadvantages. And there is a huge cold case community. There's like Reddit is like huge on that. And then there's also like even certain universities have set up departments or units that try to solve cold cases. So there's a pretty big community. But mostly most of what I belong to is either just general writing or crime writing. And you know, there's I mean, the other thing is, you know, as you know, when you write these days, you have to be out there promoting your book. So you also get connections that way. Like I have been on the Oxygen book club and the crime, what's it called? Crime Con podcast, because so there's some community, sense of community there as well.
Now, as we wrap up, what would you say to somebody who says, oh, I want to write true crime, and they're serious, not, you know, like we mentioned all the people we run into, but somebody who really says, I love true crime, I want to write true crime, what might you advice would you give them?
Well, the first thing is to, you're going to have to, the first thing I want to know is whether they had a case in mind or not. I mean, the same thing I think that I might tell any writer. Here's like an illustrative story, I think. When I was writing, when we were writing the Hazel Drew story, and it's happening now too, with, I'm writing about this 14-year-old girl up in Schenectady who was murdered 2 years ago, and it hasn't been solved, so it's a cold case. But when I was writing Hazel Drew, I would get responses from agents saying, well, you know, they never solved this. It's a 1908 murder. They never solved it. So I would get responses from agents saying, we can't publish it because you don't have a conclusion. And I would say to them, I mean, I didn't say to them, because you don't really write back to agents. But if I did, if I could have, I would have written, you know, have you ever heard of Jack the Ripper and the Black Dahlia? And it's just, my point is, like, don't, if you believe in a story, write it, because it doesn't matter. You know, there's a chance that you'll find an agent. And don't be discouraged by rejection. I know that's a trite thing to say, but a lot of these people really don't know what they're doing. And yeah. One other analogy I would make to you before you cut me off is when I worked at Variety in LA, we would write these stories about, or we would run these stories in like Jane Smith and John Doe got a multi-million-dollar deal with Universal to write and produce like 6 sitcoms. And then you'd look at their, and then the next paragraph would be about all their credits, right? These other shows that they've done. And every one of them was a failure, like just didn't make it. And what it is that so much of the establishment would rather invest in known failures than unknown anything. So they're just afraid to take chances because, you know, I mean, I guess their reputations depend on it, their livelihoods, they're just scared. And so I would say to you, if you believe in your story, you know, write it and don't be dissuaded by early rejection. So that's what I would say to any writer at all. If you're going to write true crime, you should be prepared to do a lot of research and to not expect, you know, expect to put a fair amount of time into the project, because it's going to take some time. I mean, you can't just sit in a room and imagine the story. You have to research it at libraries, online, talk to people, do a lot of digging. So you have to be in it for the long haul.
And by the way, when you mentioned that being told that something didn't have a conclusion, unsolved and cold case stories are big business. I mean, they're really popular. James Ellroy will never know who killed his mother.
Yep.
But his book about it was fascinating.
Yeah. In Dark Places. Yeah. I mean, it's just, I don't know why they think that's something that is not going to strike me as like one of the dumbest things I've ever heard, you know? Yeah. So I don't know, but it's still happening now with this story. Somebody, I was trying to pitch it to a management production company in LA, and they told me this Schenectady girl, and they told me that they've had a lot of their clients pitch come back unhappy because the production company was looking for everything to be tied up in a bow. And, you know, it just doesn't make any sense to me. You know, they just are, I don't know. I don't know, Mark. I don't have the answer to that, but it's crazy.
Now, how can people find you? Your website, your books, plug your, you know, promote yourself a little bit here from the lab.
Yeah. So, of course, I don't go anywhere near X anymore, being the cesspool that it is.
Are you on Blue Sky?
I am on Blue Sky. I'm not. I haven't been active on it yet, but I do have an account there. But I mean, I'm on Facebook, Instagram. I also we didn't really talk about our publishing companies that we run. There we have a website as well. It's www.tuckerds, Tucker, T-U-C-K-E-R, after the car, DS, David and Scott, tuckerdspress.com. And we do about 12 books a year. We're distributed internationally by Simon & Schuster. You know, if you have ideas for books, you can certainly reach out to us there. I'm happy to give you my email. Should I do that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't think, you know, yeah, I wouldn't worry too much about it.
Okay, dbbushman@gmail.com. You can reach me there. And, you know, that's, I mean, I so that those are all different ways.
Well, David, thanks. I really enjoyed talking to you. I'm glad we're on the board. I'm glad we're going to be on the communications team together. I really enjoy our conversations. And I was delighted to have you on. And I think, you know, this is a really nice feature to have for our membership and anyone else who listens to it. So thank you very much for this.
Yeah, Mark, I think that it's a pleasure to be on the board with you too, because you have a lot of great ideas and you're really conscientious and take your responsibilities seriously, and you're creative and you're obviously very helpful to me, being the novice that I am with WordPress and so on. But it's really nice being associated with you, and so I appreciate that.
And you have enjoy the rest of your weekend.
You too. Thanks.
Okay. Bye.